This is Amiga Roundtable, Episode 4, for the week of July 22nd, 2007. 800-pound gorilla. Rich Lawrence here, and my compadre, Sean Fitzgerald. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Rich. How are you?
Good.
Doing show.
Good. Yeah! And a good show we got lined up. We got all kinds of cool stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. And also, we've got an interview coming up a little bit later on with Denise Howell, host
yes,
of This Week
very,
in Law.
Yes, very nice of her to help us out with the legal predicament that Amiga is in. Maybe
yeah.
she can help decipher some terminology and make sense of some of the nonsense.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's not going to be able to talk
specifically. Yeah.
Specifics. All right. So what have you been up to?
I've been sick, man. Here it is in the middle of summer, and I get a cold. I'm the biggest baby when I'm sick, too, so my wife is just staying well clear of me.
Should we go to the news here? Let's get the news.
Yes, sir.
And just came out, Amiga OS 4, the update for July 2007 is now out, and people are downloading like mad.
Tell them what's in the update, Rich.
Oh, there's all kinds of goodies. A new exec SG kernel, which includes guard page protected stacks. Also a new semaphore type called mutex that is forbid free. Support for the new pthreads module. Also a new library that supports most of the POSIX thread API. A new ELF library that implements Unix type shared objects. And dynamic linking. I can't talk.
Wow.
That's some cool stuff, especially with ELF.
That is great. That's great news for a lot of the, I would imagine, with porting and things of that nature.
Yes. Yes. So who knows? You know,
Python
we may be seeing, GIMP.
Implementation is going on too, right?
Huh?
New version of Python?
Yes. 2.5.1. And also, the latest version of the Syrian USB stack, and a whole bunch of bug fixes. If you have downloaded it, you know you can check the documentation for all the details there. And there's a little thing on here at the end of the page that says that OS 4 is continuing apace on a number of platforms. I guess that's a good thing.
And what's your take on this? What here we are with an update. Should we read anything into this?
Oh, that's a good question. I think we're going to have to play the watch and see game because obviously Hyperion's not going to come out and say, you know, it's done because that just kills their case right there. So I'm thinking all we're going to see from now on is updates. It's never going to be finished until the court case is finished.
Exactly.
Don't expect a final anytime in the near future. So AmiKit having a wallpaper contest. And all the details are on their website, of course. Was it amikit.com?
No.
No.
I'm trying to. You threw a curveball at me. it is amikit.amiga.sk.
Ah.
And if you want the details exactly, the contest, just / that contest -2007.htm. Prizes include Image FX 4.5 Studio CD, Artifact 4 CD plus the plugins, $100 paid via PayPal. Very cool. And you can send your wallpaper submissions to, I'm going to spell it, ZAHURANCIK at CENTRUM.CZ.
Okay. And minimum, all that, of course, will be in the
minimum
show
size notes. Of the wallpaper is 1024 by 768.
Okay. I may get in on that because I like doing wallpapers now and then, so I may try doing that. So
yeah, well, that'd be cool.
I could use $100. You know?
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't want $100?
I could use it to buy an Effica.
Now you're thinking. Now you're talking.
Yeah, baby. Something else that's big news, Firefox on X11. AFX Group posted some pictures on some of the forums saying that Firefox on X11 on the Amiga compiles, but it's failing somewhere, and they're checking into it. So we may have a modern browser on the Amiga at some point in the very near future. It's just a matter of waiting and seeing how long it takes to figure out what's wrong. And yeah. I guess there's a couple other things that they said that are slowing it down because, I mean, it's an awfully big file, something like 113 megabytes. and I think it has to do with dynamic threading or something like that that they have to fix. And once they do that, it's going to get that file size down to a more manageable size for everybody.
Exactly.
Unlike the size of our podcasts. All right, next up, Vice version 1.21 for Warp OS and PowerUp is now out.
Cool.
So if you're a Commodore fan and you love those old Commodore games, like, say, Ghostbusters, remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Or Raid Over Bungling Bay?
You know, I'll give me just some of the classics, and these have been on other platforms, too, but I would have to say that nothing beats Beachhead on a 64.
Oh! Medic!
Yeah,
I'm
Raid
here.
Over Moscow. Oh, man, forget it.
Yeah, Raid Over Moscow. That one took me... It took me weeks to figure out how the hell to get out of the hangar.
The damn hangar. Yeah, I know. Absolutely. It doesn't get any better than the C64, man.
Yeah.
Near and dear to my heart.
But Vice runs on Unix, MS-DOS, Win32, OS2. And I know somebody that still has OS2.
Or Acorn what do they call it now? They call it, it's not OS2. It's,
I don't know.
Development's still ongoing with OS2, and it's... oh, shoot. I can't think of the name of it. Anyhow, it's still out there. People still use it.
Somebody, I'm sure, knows it and send it into us. But, yeah, I've seen OS2 in action. I played with it a little. It's fun. Let's see. Where did I leave off? Acorn Risk. BOS. There's an operating system I haven't heard from in a while. QNX. And that's on version 6. Also Amiga, of course. The GP2X, that handheld gaming system.
Oh,
that thing's
sweet. Yeah,
I want one of those. And, of course, Mac OS X. So I'll throw that on my PowerBook here.
speaking of that, handheld gaming and stuff, there's the PSP UAE emulator.
PSP UAE is out. They named it 0.63BE for birthday edition.
Right.
So I guess it's the anniversary. Yeah, 1 year ago it all started up. Took out a lot of unneeded code, optimized some code, get some speed in there, changed delay and latency on the sound to gain a little more speed, and we'll have a link to one of those articles, I guess, because it's just got so much stuff, and we just can't go through it all sitting here because we got so much stuff to go through. Next up, Morph OS, presentation at SceneCon, the video.
Who hasn't downloaded by this point?
Me. I've been busy.
What?
I've been busy. I haven't been able to. I've been working on the new website.
Well, let me tell you, it's fun to watch just because of, you had to read the subtitles. So, seriously, someone,
really?
God bless them, sat down and subtitled the whole thing. Really? And thank you, whoever it was that did that. I'm sure there was credits somewhere in there. But, I could sit there and watch it in silence and still be able to understand what's going on. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool.
And they had some hiccups on the video,
yeah.
But what is it with you do a show or something, and it's just like Microsoft when their PowerPoint presentations crash and they get the blue screen and death. These poor guys are plagued with all sorts of problems. But anyhow, the cool part was they got to Morph OS 2.0 and showed a release of that where 2.0 is going and some cool transparency effects, and I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to finally getting my hands on Morph OS.
And if I ever get $99, I'll probably get one. So
get your wallpaper started, man.
That's it. I could use it. I need that $100. All right, moving on. McBill doing a Q&A for AmigaWeb.net. Mike was pretty sneaky. He's sneaking that in there. McBill wouldn't answer me, but he answered Mike. With his request.
I can't wait to see how this pans out, if it does. And
I talked to Mike the other day. He said he got a reply from McBill saying that he'd have the answers by Wednesday, which is today.
Okay.
So, and
maybe that's why we can't get a hold of Mike today. He's knee-deep in McBillness.
It could be. You know,
hey, Bill,
maybe.
If you're listening to the show, hey, how you doing? What's up, man? Give us a call.
Yeah. But one thing I thought was kind of sneaky, though, and it wasn't Mike, scooping us on that. But
right.
He agrees to do the Q&A, and then a day later, 2 days later, iTech files a suit against Hyperion.
Wah, wah, wah.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Cue incidental music.
Wait, we're not supposed to do the cheesy show until show 10.
Oh, okay. Yeah, our anniversary show, the 10th anniversary show. Isn't that what happened with the whole Hyperion lawsuit, too?
He answered
questions, and then wham.
Yep.
When McBill speaks, lawsuits happen. and that segues us into iTech, naturally, of course, filing suit against Hyperion. And Hyperion, I think, was probably taken a little off guard, because one of their main points about the whole thing was that Amiga didn't own the IPs to OS4 and everything else because, you know, they were insolvent. And McBill even said that. And that Hyperion should get the IPs. And then out comes iTech, files suit, and says, we don't want to be a party of this. We don't want to get in on this. One of their points in their argument, iTech's anyway, is that, well, if Amiga was insolvent, then that means we own the IPs, and Hyperion has no cause to be filing for the IPs in the first place. So where does that come in? Homie, don't play that.
Yeah, it doesn't bode well, you know?
No. So I think Hyperion was kind of on the upper footing, but now it seems like, you know, iTech kind of took the rug out from under them on one of their arguments, so.
But, you know, that comment I just said doesn't bode well. I got to stop that, because a lot of this is just posturing.
That's true.
You know? And all it is legal posturing, and you can't even make any, you know, I might be saying the same thing on Hyperion's side next week. You know what I mean?
That's true. When everything started, I was kind of in Hyperion's corner, but then I slowly kind of went over to Amiga's corner, and now it's like, I don't know where the hell I stand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a soap opera.
And it'll keep going and going and going.
Yes. It's gone from a 600-pound gorilla to an 800-pound gorilla.
It is a Megilla gorilla, a grape ape, if you will.
And for those in Europe that don't know about these are cartoons, go check out Wikipedia.
Hanna-Barbera is God.
Hanna-Barbera, yes. Well, they may know it. If they know Yogi Bear, then they'll know those two.
Yeah. A couple different little releases and new updates that have occurred. Reggae for MorphOS just recently got GIF 87A support. It's a new updated version of Luna Paint. Still hasn't hit that version 1 mark yet, but a new update there for Eros. Gosh, I'm trying to think if anything else is going on. Any new software releases off the top of your head? Oh, Scum VM.
Yep.
0.10. Yep, for MorphOS.
Then the only other thing was, you know, Lemmings DS. That's version 7.04. That's pretty much it for the software updates lately.
There's other ones out there. I'm just off the
top
of my head.
Yeah.
Incidentally, OS 4 just got a plug in OS News.
It did?
Yeah.
Just now?
Just a little bit ago, yeah.
Oh, live. Late breaking. This is it. Amiga Roundtable.
Hey, and if any, you know what, can I mention one quick thing before we break? If anybody has any news-related items, you're a developer about to release an update, you want to give us a scoop, and so we don't sound like tools on the air, hey, drop us a line, let us know, give us a scoop. We'll plug the hell out of your whatever you got going on, and we'd appreciate the input and the help.
Stick around. Denise Howell coming up next, host of This Week in Law. She's going to be talking about the Amiga Hyperion case, as well as a little bit about the iTech suit. That's all coming up. For Sean Fitzgerald, I'm Rich Lawrence. Stick around. Hi, it's Rich Lawrence, host of Amiga Roundtable, but also host of the All 80s Saturday Night, Central New York's only local and live 80s show. Join me for 4 hours of great 80s memories, your requests, and a chance to be a winner with the 80s Music Challenge. Plus, you can listen live on our website at lite987.com. That's lite987.com. Happens every Saturday night at 8 p.m. on Central New York station that owns the 80s, Light 98.7, WLZW. All right, Rich Lawrence here for Amiga Roundtable, and with us, special guest, Denise Howell, host of This Week in Law over at twit.tv. Denise, welcome to the show. Thank you for being on.
Hey, Rich, it's great to be here.
Well, thank you. All right, well, I've filled you in a little bit on the whole Amiga Hyperion case off the air, and a lot of us have questions as to how everything works when it comes to court and that with disputes and lawsuits. First thing is, what's usually the procedure for a court case about contracts? After someone files a lawsuit, what's generally going to happen?
Well, what happens is there's a limited amount of time within which to respond to the lawsuit. And the response can take a couple of different forms. You can either answer the complaint, or you can do something immediately to try and make the lawsuit go away. And from what you were telling me before we started recording, the Amiga versus Hyperion lawsuit is pending in a federal court in the United States in the state of Washington. So one of the things that a party could do is bring a motion to dismiss, which would attack the basis of the lawsuit right at the front end and try and make it go away. Now, unless you have a very strong basis for that, those things are fairly rarely granted, but that doesn't keep people from giving it a shot. So I'm not sure, you know, if that's been attempted yet in this lawsuit, but it's certainly something that can be tried right out of the gate by a defendant. And if that doesn't work, then the suit, ultimately the defendant answers the complaint, which means they go through the allegations and they either admit or deny what has been alleged if, on a sentence-by-sentence basis. So, you know, if there's an allegation that the company is incorporated in a certain place and that's accurate, then they would admit it. And then if there's an allegation that the company breached a contract, of course, that's the heart of the lawsuit, right, and that would be denied, and then they would go forward from there and start the whole discovery process, which is how the parties find out the evidence that they will then use either once again to launch a great big attack on the lawsuit in its total before trial, which can be done in a summary judgment setting, or ultimately, if that kind of thing isn't successful, then you wind up in trial. But any time along the way, the parties can decide, you know, back and forth through negotiations and posturing, and based on what comes out in the evidence during discovery, they might decide to settle the case too.
Go into like an arbitration type thing or something like that?
Well, no, arbitration's a whole different means of resolving a dispute separate from a court process. They certainly could agree at any time to move the case from a court dispute resolution setting, which it's in now, and move it into arbitration. But now that it's in the court system, I doubt that would happen. Now, in a contract case, which this one is, sometimes you have an arbitration clause in the contract, and the other, which means that all disputes are supposed to be resolved in arbitration. And if a lawsuit is filed in that sort of situation, then another way of responding to the lawsuit is, sorry, this is not the kind of dispute that is supposed to be resolved in a lawsuit. We agreed to arbitrate our disputes. So you would move to have the case moved over into arbitration. Again, I don't know if that's something that applies in this case because I haven't read the contract, but it's, again, something the parties can argue about early on is whether it should be arbitrated or tried in the courts. Then another dispute resolution process that a lot of people confuse with arbitration, they sort of use them interchangeably, but they're two different things, is mediation. And mediation is a voluntary process that the parties agree to where they get together and say, okay, we know we have disagreements here, but the litigation process is a long and arduous and expensive and unpleasant one. We'll bring in a third-party mediator and see if that person can help us resolve the dispute and make it go away. And there are a lot of professional mediators that are very, very good at bringing even diametrically opposed parties into some form of agreement so that they can get on with their business.
So mediation could be a good alternative for these companies to get their disputes taken care of without having to go through the whole rigmarole of through the court system, plus probably save them both a lot of money, because a lot of people are saying this could be really costly to all the companies involved in this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that the parties think about in any lawsuit. They don't necessarily do it, but, you know, and they don't necessarily discuss it with one another. But as each one of them is plotting their strategy, how they're going to go forward, certainly the thought of proposing mediation and having mediation comes up.
Okay. Is that something they have to clear with the judge, or can they just go right into it and get it done?
Usually they let the court know, because the court process is designed so that it moves along at a rapid pace. And there are frequently motions pending and deadlines and a trial date on the calendar somewhere a ways out and things that the parties are supposed to be accomplishing before trial. And if you go ahead and let the court know that you're in mediation, you might get some relief from some of those deadlines and be able to focus on the mediation, because ultimately the court would like to see the case go away too and not have to go to trial.
Right. Save a lot of time and money. Yeah. How long can a case like this go on, theoretically? I mean, could it be years?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Any case potentially could go on for years and years and years. The initial part of the case, just getting it to trial and getting a judgment in trial, if the parties don't figure out a way or find a way to resolve the case at some point before trial, that typically in the federal courts, you know, it depends on the size of the case. Like I said, the courts try and move things along rapidly and really have a goal of getting cases resolved in a year if they can to judgment. Mm-hmm. But then judgment, you know, my background is as an appellate lawyer. So judgment for me is just the beginning of the story, because once there's a judgment, one of the parties is likely not terribly happy with it. And even the party who the judgment is in favor of might not be happy with all aspects of the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So the appellate process begins at that point, and you can appeal to the circuit courts of the United States to get, you know, whatever legal errors might have, you know, a party contends occurred at the trial court level, you can attempt to get them set aside and get a different result.
Now, one thing that Amiga used at the start of the trial was, or when they were getting it to court, was an injunction to stop Hyperion from using its trademarks, its name, and its images and likenesses in that. Are injunctions a common thing in contract disputes? How do they usually work?
Injunctions are pretty common. If there is something going on that violates another party's right, and the touchstone for getting an injunction is really two things. Is there irreparable harm being done to the party who's seeking the injunction? And the court comes in and assesses what that party puts in front of the court and decides whether they are likely to succeed at trial on those issues. The court doesn't make a determination about how the trial will come out, but just looks at things and makes an estimation whether there is a strong likelihood of success. And if so, then an injunction can be issued, and it sounds like that's what happened here.
Yeah, and the judge did turn down the injunction.
Oh, it did turn down the injunction, or it ran?
Amiga's initial injunction to stop Hyperion, the judge ruled that no, you know, you can't have the injunction.
Right, so they must have had a hard time convincing the court that they were, you know, pretty much going to succeed on those claims, that instead there was enough question about that it should go forward to trial, you know, and the status quo should be maintained rather than stopping whatever activity was going on.
Another thing that was brought up in our case was one company is outside the United States. And if that company supposedly loses, the judge finds against them, or the jury, or what, or however it works, what kind of enforcement can we could Amiga look for? I mean, can Hyperion just say, well, we're in another country and we're not going to worry about it? Does Amiga have any kind of remedies for that? Is there something they can do?
Yeah, they sure can. The nations of the world, and again, this varies nation by nation, have compacts and treaties with one another that recognize foreign judgments when they are brought into their local court systems. So it's Hyperion who's out of the country, is that right?
Yeah, Hyperion is in Belgium.
In Belgium. So,
yeah.
You know, most of the EU countries and the United States have, you know, very established enforcement of judgment procedures. If you get a judgment here in the U.S., you can take it to Belgium and begin executing against assets there. Now, again, this is where the appellate process comes in, because once there is an appeal pending, then the whole enforcement of judgment process grinds to a halt, and you have to wait until there's a final outcome after the appeal process has run.
Now, how far could they take that appeal process? I mean, could they conceivably take it all the way to the Supreme Court? Or is that something that they wouldn't even entertain?
Well, conceivably, yes, any federal case can wind up before the Supreme Court, but that's up to the Supreme Court ultimately. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. Supreme Court takes a very, very small amount, a very small percentage of the cases that people ask it to take. So what happens is you go up to the circuit court and you get a decision there. And, you know, again, one party is probably pleased with it. The other party is not, may not mm-hmm. be the same situation as what happened at trial. Either, you know, the trial judgment stands or it gets reversed or somehow modified. And then the parties look at things at that juncture and say, okay, well, we have this opportunity to ask the Supreme Court to get involved. But you have to be very clever and creative in yeah. asking the Supreme Court to get involved, because it really will only take cases where there is a dire need for it to step in mm-hmm. and give its take on the situation. You know, the one that springs to mind in sort of recent history is the Al Gore versus George Bush case, yeah. where, you know, the entire government of the country and the election process were all sort of hanging in the balance, and the Supreme Court, very unusually, you know, before there was even a final judgment, agreed to get involved there and resolve things. The more typical situation is you have a decision from one of the circuit courts and it is in conflict legally with the decision of another circuit court in the United States. And so that is typically how Supreme Court practitioners tee up these cases for acceptance by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court doesn't like there to be conflict between and different laws being applied, the same law being applied differently in different parts of the country.
Okay, so they could settle the whole thing once and for all. But what do you think the chances would be of a general contract dispute like this going to the Supreme Court? I would think probably pretty slim.
Tiny, yeah. Contract disputes, you know, are resolved via very established principles of laws that have been around, you know, that date back well before our own legal system, back to the British common law system. And, you know, it depends on whether this is a straight contract case. It sounds like it might also potentially involve some UCC or Uniform Commercial Code issues, which is a statute that we've enacted mm-hmm. here in the United States to deal with certain contract cases that primarily concern delivery of goods. And it sounds like that might be the kind of situation that we're dealing with here. I haven't read the complaint, so I don't know if there are UCC claims involved or not. But again, you know, the law to resolve all of those kinds of disputes is very well established, and there aren't any real sort of wrinkles or opportunities for a court to get a whole lot wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, you can argue creatively on appeal, but getting a contract issue before the Supreme Court is pretty rare.
Yeah, there's no like magic loopholes or anything like that one side or the other can use. It's pretty much straightforward as to what you can do and what you can't do and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of wriggle room in contracts when it comes to how they get interpreted, you know, the language mm-hmm. of the contract, whether the contract is going to be enforced in strict accordance with its terms, or perhaps there's some other side agreement that the parties have that somebody is going to argue should come into play, and the other party is going to claim, no, this is our sole contract, and it will be enforced in accordance with its terms. Sometimes there are oral agreements that parties claim should modify the contract, and they get into battles about that. And then you get down to what precisely the terms of the contract are. And even though folks try to be very careful in drafting contracts, there's a whole sort of quality control issue that mm-hmm. that comes into play in the drafting process. And, you know, you just can't anticipate whether a term is going to be what terms of the contract are ultimately going to be in dispute, and when it comes right down to it, whether the language that was used is ambiguous or not. And that's generally up to the court to decide.
Okay. Well, now, are these kind of lawsuits becoming more and more commonplace now in the global marketplace with the internet and like NAFTA and all these other trade agreements that are going on? Are we going to see a lot more of these as the world gets smaller and smaller?
Contract cases, international contract cases?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think that parties are dealing with each other across international boundaries and that whether they've taken the time to actually document their relationship in a detailed way or not, if you're doing business with somebody, odds are you have some form of contractual relationship with them and can enforce the rights that are involved in that.
Now, do you know of any kind of statistics or anything about how many of these kind of cases like go all the way through the court system as compared to they getting settled out of court? And do you know of anything like that?
Yeah, and I don't know the exact statistics off the top of my head, but I can tell you the percentage of cases that actually go to trial. If I had to guess, I'd say it was maybe 5 or 10%. Most cases settle.
So there's a good statistical possibility that this could be settled out of court and it'll never even see the inside of a courtroom.
There's a very good statistical possibility, yes. The only times cases really wind up in court is when, you know, the parties just get completely entrenched in their positions and they can't be convinced that the other side has some reasonable chance of winning at trial. Because trial is really like going to Vegas, you know, with a whole pile of money. Ooh. And, you know, your odds, and I hate to say this about our legal system, because people like to think that it affords you more certainty and that justice will out. And, you know, I mean, it certainly is a good legal system as compared to most of the other alternatives in the world. But the fact is, the variables, you know, when you sit down and you do your cost-benefit analysis of taking something to trial, the variables are just too difficult to predict and control. And it really is like taking a pile of money in, putting it on the table and seeing, you know, you put it on red, see if it comes up red. So for that reason, most cases, parties sit back and look at it and find a way to settle.
Wow. I like that analogy. I like Vegas. I'm sure a lot of people will get that one.
Yeah. Unfortunately, when people are involved in lawsuits, they don't like that analogy at all.
Roll the dice. Yeah. There we go. Well, thank you, Denise, for being on the show. I appreciate you answering all our questions and you know, giving a lot more people a lot more insight to the whole legal process that we got going on here in this case. And why don't you go ahead and tell everybody all about your website and your podcast. You know, let them know where they can find you online.
Sure. My primary blog these days is at ZDNet, and it is called Logarithms. At LAWGARITHMS.com. My longtime personal blog is Bag and Baggage. You can always find me doing something around there. I contribute to a group blog with a bunch of lawyers called Between Lawyers, where we talk about legal issues and things that lawyers talk about among one another. Mm-hmm. And then I do a couple of different podcasts. You mentioned This Week in Law over at TWIT, and also one at the Conversations Network. That's called Sound Policy.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll make sure to get those in the show notes so everybody can check out your websites and your blogging and everything. And I got to say, Bag and Baggage looks really, really cool. I like the way it looks.
Oh, great. Thank you.
I like it. I may steal the background.
Yeah, you know.
I can't get in trouble for that, can I?
Our own legal considerations to think about.
Yeah. Well, Denise, thanks once again for being on Amiga Roundtable. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Rich. Take care.
All right. Thanks. And stick around. We'll close up shop here on Amiga Roundtable in just a little bit. I'm Rich Lawrence.
Just Not Right. The podcast is proud to announce a contest with prizes. Can you imitate a cartoon, celebrity, or anybody else badly?
You dumb Mises to pieces!
Oh my gosh, does that suck?
If you can, record it on an MP3 and send it to jake.cordova@gmail.com for your chance to win one of two fabulous prizes. Just Not Right, the podcast. Good Bad Impression Contest!
Now that is a man who has eaten a lot of beef.
See more at notrightpodcast.com.
And that's going to wrap up another Amiga Roundtable. I want to thank Denise Howell from This Week in Law for coming on Amiga Roundtable. You can visit Denise's website for links to all her podcasts and blogs at bgbg.blogspot.com and This Week in Law at twit.tv. If you have any comments or questions about Amiga Roundtable, stop by our website at www.amigaz.org or you can email us, AmigaRoundtable@gmail.com. Amiga Roundtable is a production of AmiZ Studios and the Amiga Z BBS. For my co-host, Sean Fitzgerald, I'm Rich Lawrence. Thanks for listening.